Want to talk a little hockey? Why are we asking? Of course you do. This is Hockey Nation with Gord Stellick and Todd Helluschko on Toronto Sports Radio. Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
Well, it's anything but hockey weather outside, but Hockey Nation on the airwaves. Gord Stellick here over the next 2 hours right here on Sportsnet. 590 The Fan, a Blue Jay win. Thanks to my buddy Tom Bitto. I've got to do a little baseball and now some hockey this afternoon. So a perfect kind of afternoon to chat, set up. Game number 6 tomorrow night between the Pittsburgh Penguins and the San Jose Sharks. And, of course, a lot over the next 2 hours. We will talk about, whether you want to say, the memories, eulogize to a degree, but what a week it's been. And yesterday, just as the Muhammad Ali funeral was being broadcast and broadcast on these airwaves on Sportsnet, and we got the news that Gordie Howe, Mr. Hockey, had passed away at the age of 88. So a tough year, tough week in the world of sports. Two icons, two giants in many different ways, and we will bring some people on. We'll bring some people on to chat about that as well. Scotty Bowman will join us in an hour's time. President Barack Obama, among those sending their condolences out there. So it's certainly, and of course, Justin Trudeau, the Prime Minister. So larger than life and all kinds of accolades and tributes coming in, whether it's on Twitter and that. But just yesterday, I happened to be on Sportsnet and here on Hockey Central at noon. And so we went about 4 hours and chatted with a number of people. Someone like Emil Francis, who I hadn't talked to for many years, but Emil Francis is a really underrated guy as general manager of the New York Rangers, then the St. Louis Blues, and briefly the Hartford Whalers. But he grew up with Gordie Howe in Saskatchewan. So we'll play a little bit of that. And then Wayne Gretzky. There's many sides of Wayne Gretzky. And this one, we all know about his reverence and adulation for Gordie Howe as a youngster. That great picture when I think Wayne Gretzky's 10 years old of them, and then they restaged it a number of years later with the Gordie Howe kiddingly put the hockey stick hooking it around Wayne Gretzky's neck. And we know that Wayne Gretzky had been insistent, you know, wanted Gordie Howe with him when he broke some of Gordie Howe's records. So Gordie Howe traveled with him for like 10 days, and then they stopped it. There would be a ceremony, and he wanted to make sure that proper allegiance and proper tribute was paid to Mr. Hockey. And you know, Wayne just... He just started talking, and he just, you know, the stories kept coming, and he even said that. He goes, wow, I'm talking, and I can't believe how many memories I have of Gordie Howe. So we're going to play that in about 12 minutes' time, so you can catch that. Jamie Baker, though, we'll get back to business. We thought yesterday we'd be talking about, wow, the Stanley Cup was supposed to be presented in Pittsburgh. It was supposed to be over. And, then a guy named Martin Jones decided he would steal a game, and that always is something that can happen in Stanley Cup playoff action. The hot goaltender plays trump card. So we'll chat with Jamie Baker of the San Jose Sharks, because former Leaf, we've talked to him a number of times about the San Jose Sharks. Can they do it in game 6 tomorrow night and then force a game 7 on Wednesday? As mentioned, Scotty Bowman will join us in about an hour's time. He was on yesterday too. He had some really, really outstanding memories. He's got outstanding memories of everybody, but also certainly about Gordie Howe. Bill Ranford. And here's a guy that we're used to in the National Hockey League, a guy that's used to winning Stanley Cups, and goalie coach, former goalie coach for Martin Jones, and he knows him quite well. And obviously, he did an excellent job, and that's one reason the San Jose Sharks decided they would give up a first-round pick and make him their guy. And then we'll chat with Phil Bork, the analyst for the Pittsburgh Penguins. And, yeah, it'd be interesting. I wonder what kind of pressure they are feeling or aren't feeling after the way things went on Thursday. And a lot of it comparables. I know we've chatted to guys like Nick Kiprios and Glenn Healy, and they were two members of that 1994 New York Ranger team that won the Stanley Cup. And there's an element of similarity. That series was 3-1 for the Rangers, went back game 5 in New York, full of confidence, full of fire and brimstone. And then little things like the Stanley Cup parade route got published in one of the papers. Now, it wasn't supposed to get published, but they put a parade route together because you have to be prepared. And that was the last thing you wanted out there. So Vancouver beats the Rangers. Then you make the long trek back to Vancouver. Vancouver handily wins game number 6. And then game number 7, a one-goal victory for the New York Rangers, their first Stanley Cup since 1940. So 54 years went on that way. And is this going to be the same? Because nobody wanted to travel back to San Jose, certainly anybody from the Pittsburgh Penguins, but that's what they're doing, a comparable type trip like the New York Rangers made all those years ago out to Vancouver. So we'll see what happens. Of course, it'll be on the Fan Radio Network tomorrow night. Todd Alushka, myself, we do the pregame, intermissions, and postgame, and then the broadcast crew of Mike Lang and Phil Bourque take over. And as mentioned, Phil Bourque will be joining us a little bit later on next hour. So some of the stories that are going on around, we're getting set, of course, the NHL. Once the Stanley Cup is presented, then we can get back to the focus here as far as the NHL draft goes, the NHL awards. So there'll be a lot of things heading up that way. And then free agent frenzy is actually a time right around when there's more trades than there is at the actual NHL trade deadline. So a number of things, as you mentioned, coming in. The Red Wings and the Howe family plan to hold a public visitation for Gordie Howe, Joe Louis Arena on Tuesday, June 14th. So we'll see that from 9 a.m. till 9 p.m. There'll be a public visitation, a number of things out there about how people can donate to various charities and what is going on. So we'll keep you posted about that. We mentioned as well President Barack Obama. And I don't know how often you get this from the White House. He just said the list of players, talked about that. Yeah, I'll read a little bit later on, but basically he talked about Mr. Hockey and send his condolences to everybody and from Hockeytown to Hartford to Houston and across North America. So he had it. The outgoing president certainly had it all in context. Chris Johnson joining Gord Stellick, of course, regular contributor on our show, but also Sportsnet, sportsnet.ca. How are you today, Chris?
I'm doing well. I'm standing beside our good friend Colby Armstrong. So everything is going swimmingly here at the Shark Tank.
Okay, well, you know, I'm sure it's one of those things Peter DeBoer was kidding about, but he kind of says the media get in a thing where you want it to end. And certainly guys like Colby Armstrong doing broadcasts for the Pittsburgh Penguins certainly want it to end. How would you characterize the vibe or the feeling now after what was assumed, I wouldn't say a slam dunk, but it was the San Jose Sharks that literally had to swim upstream and did it with excellent goaltending the other night. And how would you rate the pressure element right now on both teams?
Oh, I mean, it's real. It's June 11th, and they're going to a practice day today, and they're going to play a game on June 12th, and it's a game with high stakes. So, you know, everyone seems relatively relaxed. It's a nice weather here in California. I'm sure some of the boys have snuck out for some pool time since arriving here, or you know something to relax their bodies and their minds. But you know, it's pretty intense because we're you play this far down the road and that many games, and you go through everything you go through. I mean, you don't want to end your season with a loss. And, you know, one of these teams, unfortunately, is going to, you know, face that reality at some point.
But yeah, I want to talk about the game a little bit more. Of course, game six will be tomorrow night in San Jose. And, Chris, just last week when we were doing the show, Pete DeBoer had a wonderful personal anecdote. He talked about meeting Muhammad Ali all those years ago at the Royal Connaught Hotel in Hamilton. And certainly yesterday, yep. I mean, I don't know if you saw it, but I don't know, you know, I know I'm a little bit older than you, but I found the speeches and the tributes to the funeral, I actually found them very impactful and powerful. I listening, whether it's Bill Clinton or Billy Crystal or just, you know, family members, and I assume it will be the same for Gordie Howe. We certainly heard it in the hockey world as we had extended coverage. So just on the hockey front, you know, yesterday we were going to chat more about the game and then the news came out, and certainly your thoughts. I mean, it's Mr. Hockey, and you try to describe to anybody under a certain age, maybe under 50, don't have a lot of memories of him actually playing or not, but I do, but it's more the aura afterwards.
Well, what strikes me is simply just the volume of stories and then the number of people, the large, incredibly large number of people that Gordie Howe touched and that, you know, gave all these people an anecdote. I mean, that's what I notice is that people from all over the spectrum, be it, you know, as you mentioned, some famous people, just some writers even, you know, had personal stories that you know, something happened with Gordie and they remembered it to this day and, you know, brought a smile to their face. And, you know, even I'm only 10 minutes removed from chatting with Sidney Crosby about the same thing. And he was ear to ear talking about the first time he met Gordie Howe. He was early in his career and he played a game in Detroit, and out of nowhere, Gordie kind of appeared and had a few words with him. And, you know, just, you know, so that it really stuck with him. So, you know, I think that the Mr. Hockey nickname, you know, kind of says it all about Gordie. There's just no one that's in the sport or loves the sport that didn't have reverence for him, and, you know, almost to a person seemed to have some sort of personal connection to him.
You know, it's and Ron McLean mentioned that Gordie Howe's, you go back to the roots, Gordie Howe's mom during the Depression, and someone was desperate and was selling their clothes or whatever it may be. So she, you know, scrubbed up $3, which was a lot of money, and gave it to the woman. Didn't really need all the clothes or not, but on the bottom, there were a pair of skates. And that's how it started. There just happened to be, she didn't even know there were a pair of skates. And Gordie Howe and his sister tried them on, and they fit Gordie Howe. And it just, you know, you go back to, those roots. And I thought after Chris as well that I realized the Saskatchewan roots, that he sort of became the prototypical guy that a lot of people, that peripheral hockey fans would go, oh, yeah, you know, a kid from small town Saskatchewan, just in general, it sort of became the stereotypical hockey player. And I realized that's because of Gordie Howe.
Right, the influence is that deep. And, you know, Colby Armstrong actually was one of those, kind of a gritty guy, also Saskatchewan boy. So it does come full circle. But, yeah, I mean, it's been quite a thing to see. I mean, it's on par. Certainly, I think the level of reaction to what we saw when John Beliveau passed away last year. And you know, I feel that it's you know, kind of similar. Our sport, if there was a Mount Rushmore of hockey, Gordie Howe would certainly have a place on there. And you know, it's something I guess everybody's thinking of, and you know, really, I think remembering fondly because he was fortunate to live a long life and a good life, and you know, as I mentioned, just you know, touched so many people, and I think he'll be remembered, you know, for a long, long time around this game.
Yeah, and whether it's you know Wendell Clark, Brian Trotsky, Mike Babcock, or as you say, Colby Armstrong, the Saskatchewan heritage and pride has carried on. Now, that for Game 6. So, if the Pittsburgh Penguins are to win, what is the key? And if the San Jose Sharks are to force a Game 7, you know, beyond the obvious, which you saw with Martin Jones or Matt Murray, whomever, having a game like that, what are the keys that way in your mind?
Well, for San Jose to extend the series, I think they have to find a way to play with the puck more, to defend better, to not have Pittsburgh spending so much time in their zone. I mean, it was tremendous what Martin Jones did in Game 5, but, you know, I wouldn't want to bet on him doing that two more times just because I think it's an awful lot to ask. And you know, he was sensational, and you know, I think that they should only count on him being great. You know, he doesn't have to steal every game and walk on water, but that's what he did, you know, to get the series back here. And I think his teammates have to respond. And, you know, we've seen him do it. There was a game earlier in the series where Pittsburgh was kept under 30 shots. And I think that is a huge key for the Sharks, not to let the Penguins be dominated to that degree. And, you know, really for Pittsburgh, I'm sure the message that they're getting is just do the same thing. I mean, they've been the best team in the series. There's no way around that. They've dominated large portions of every game. And, you know, they believe if they just stick to what they're doing that eventually, you know, San Jose won't be able to have a counterattack for it. So, you know, I don't think there's even really much of an adjustment for the Penguins other than maybe getting off to a bit better start. You know, they've since acknowledged that they were kind of feeling the nerves or the anxiety, almost just too much energy, you know, with the chance to close it out at home and you know, kind of, you know, didn't have the game they wanted in the first 5 minutes, but you know, they've played well in this series, and you know, I think we'll see a lot more of the same from them.
Yeah, you can certainly argue the Penguins are up 3-2, but have dominated or had the edge in all five games as far as that goes. Goaltending, you know, some people wondering Marc-Andre Fleury because he's there. Is there any talk whatsoever about possibilities in Game 6 or a short leash, or if they went to Game 7?
Not really. You know, I don't see Mike Sullivan going down that road. I mean, they tried it in the Lightning series. And you know, really, Marc-Andre Fleury, I think the biggest knock on him right now is he's played one game since March 31st. I mean, that's a long stretch to be off and to get thrown into this kind of circumstance. I just feel is not a place where you can reasonably expect him to perform well. And you know, he didn't play that well when he got in against the Lightning. And that's why, you know, they've stopped. They've gone back to Matt Murray. And, you know, I think that there's very much a sort of dance with the girl that brought you, you know, that old saying that they're going to stick by this kid. And, you know, maybe if he struggles early in the game and lets in a couple questionable goals, you think about the change. But, you know, to this point, I've got no sense whatsoever that the Penguins are entertaining that thought, both as a starter for Game 6, but even, you know, for Game 7 potentially or somewhere. I really believe they're going to win or lose with Matt Murray between the net.
Chris, I know you look forward to tomorrow night. We'll look forward to your reports as well. Thanks for joining us.
Okay, Gord, thank you.
Chris Johnson, NHL on Sportsnet, sportsnet.ca in San Jose. I meant to say, yeah, actually, tell him to give a shout-out to Colby. Forgot to give regards to our guy Colby Armstrong doing some work on Sportsnet. He's part of the Pittsburgh Penguin pregame coverage. So he, I imagine, a little worried. The Penguins are. We'll talk to Phil Bourque about that a little bit later as well. Jamie Baker at the bottom of the hour, color voice of the San Jose Sharks. And in about 45 minutes' time, Scotty Bowman will join us, and we'll talk about Gordie Howe at that point. Well, as mentioned yesterday, a number of those came on to pay tribute, and Wayne Gretzky was joined us. I was there with Darren Millard, Scott Morrison, Nick Kyprios, and myself. We'll just get it teed up here. But anyway, he was on a number of places yesterday, but it was, as I mentioned earlier, it was kind of a just a brainstorming, mainstreaming, just thoughts coming out, and so many memories that he had about his long association with Gordie Howe. And here it is, a little bit. Darren Millard kicks things off. Wayne Gretzky joining us yesterday on Sportsnet's special tribute to Gordie Howe with myself, Scott Morrison, Nick Kyprios, and starts with Darren Millard.
He's linked to several longtime National Hockey League teammates, and as well as those that that played against him. And one of those is Wayne Gretzky, the man that went on to break a lot of Gordie Howe's longtime records and all-time records. And Wayne joins us now. And first, give you the stage, Wayne, to offer your thoughts on the passing of Gordie Howe.
Oh, wow. I don't even know where to begin, because obviously it's a sad day for not only his family, but for the millions of fans that had an opportunity to see him play over the years, and for the thousands of people that got to shake his hand, to how nice and how humble he really was as a person. It's crazy how the world works, you know. In the last 7 days, we've lost two of the not only greatest athletes who ever lived, but two of the nicest people that you'd ever want to meet, that understood their responsibility for their sport and for what they believed in life. And Gordie Howe was truly a big impact in the hockey world, as Muhammad Ali was to the boxing world. So it's just a crazy week. And as I said, athletes come along, and 10 years from now, there'll be another great hockey player and probably another great boxer. But we don't have people that replace people like Gordie Howe and Muhammad Ali, just real special men who happen to love their sport that transcended life. And, you know, we just, I was fortunate enough to be able to say, and not too many kids get to say, that their idol became a friend, and Gordie and I obviously became good friends.
You got the chance to meet him for the first time, I believe, when you were 10 at a sports banquet. Was that moment as awe-inspiring as the first time you got to skate with him, be on the ice with him?
Oh, it was probably more influential. I was 10 years old. I remember thinking, wow, I'm going to get a chance to meet Gordie Howe. Now, I was, listen, my whole life was around Gordie Howe. I mean, you're a kid, you dream, and you have all these ambitions and goals, and you have idols, and Gordie was my idol. And sometimes when you meet your idol, it's not great. Everyone has bad days. And I remember my dad said to me, how was it meeting Gordie Howe? And I said, oh, my God, he's bigger and better and nicer. And he was everything I ever imagined and more. A gentleman and somebody who obviously had a huge impact on not only my life, but my entire family. He was great to my dad and my mom. He was kind to people who were around him. And my dad always says, if you ever look at Gordie Howe's signature, you can read exactly what it says. It says Gordie Howe. And he said, you know, if he can take the time to write a signature, each and every player or athlete in this day and age should be able to write the name properly and not scribble it. So obviously he was a big part of not only my life, but my entire family.
We just saw, Wayne, that famous picture from that banquet of you and Gordie, and he's got the stick around your throat posing for it. What was going through your mind at that point?
I was so scared. Let me tell you, I was so nervous standing there beside him, thinking, oh, my goodness. And ironically, I don't think I've ever told the story that it was sort of Gordie that orchestrated the picture, and he was the one that said, okay, kid, stand here, and I'm going to do this, and just look at the camera. And if he would have told me to jump in the pool with my suit on, I probably would have done that. So I was pretty enamored by him, but Oh, my goodness. It seems like that picture was taken yesterday. Obviously, I got to reenact the picture. I think in 1989, we did redo a picture of the two of us that was similar to that, that obviously didn't have the same impact as the first one. But, gosh, I've been talking a lot today about Gordy, and I didn't really realize how many thousands of stories I have, from playing, going fishing with him, to playing an all-star game with him, to watch. Now, I can remember one time I went to watch his two boys play for Detroit Junior Red Wings against the Brantford Majors, which was a Tier 2 junior team in Brantford, and Gordy came to the game, and I purposely sat a row right in front of him, and I think I stared at him throughout the whole game just to be able to marvel at him. But just a really special man, and I played in a charity golf tournament in the Greater Hartford Open, and I played with Sammy Davis Jr., Gordie Howe, and Sam Snead. And somebody said to me, you know, that Sam Snead, he can be a little bit testy and a little bit grumpy. And I was so nervous. I was a 19-year-old kid, and Gordy had invited me down to play in the tournament. And one of the guys who was there said, don't worry about that. Mr. Snead's real intimidated by Gordy Howe. I remember thinking, okay, I'm okay. I got Gordy with me. But I got so many stories. And, you know, I was so fortunate to become friends with him over the years, and how humble he was. And what was intriguing to me is how recognizable he was. At a young age, we walked to an airport, and everybody knew Gordy Howe. And Gordy always would stop, and he was always in a suit and tie. He'd always sign autographs, always took pictures. Just really Canadian and a special man.
Wayne, there's no question that there's a deeper connection between players that carry the torch somewhat of being at the top of their game, and we see it in other sports as well. But when did you first realize that Gordy could be more than just, you know, an acquaintance, and that the friendship could go deeper? And how often did you lean on that friendship when it came to certain things like advice?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I got so many stories. I remember one time I just turned pro. I signed my contract in, I guess, June, and it was early July. We were at a charity dinner in Kitchener, Ontario. And I remember it like it was yesterday. My dad and I went, and Gus Bedelli had arranged for me to be part of the event. Although I didn't have to speak, Gord came in this nice black limousine, and I remember thinking, wow, that's pretty cool. And so anyway, we did the dinner, and Gordy and I chatted, and the only thing he told me that night is, not your sign, you got to work even that much harder. And as we were pulling out, my dad had this old car, and it wouldn't start. And Gordy came walking out, and he said, kid, the first thing you do when you turn pro is you got to buy your mom and dad a new car. So then, the next day, I went and bought my dad a car. So, you know, he was always comfortable with people. He loved people. I remember there was a gentleman in Edmonton named Mick Ma, who owned part of the Edmonton Oil Kings in the 70s, and he owned a Chinese restaurant, the Blue Willow. And every time Gordy would go to Edmonton, he'd always go there for dinner to sit and talk to Vic and his wife, Esther. He never going to the restaurant, because when you became a friend of Gordy's, you were a friend for life. I was saying earlier, you know, some parts of the game have changed a little bit. One of the things that's changed is the relationship between the athletes and the media. And you look at time and time again over the years, Gordy was good friends with, you know, Danny Gallivan and Dick Irvin and Frank Orr from the Toronto Star and Falls from the Detroit Free Press and Dick Beddoes in Hamilton. He went fishing with those guys. He spent time with those guys. They truly were friends with Gordy. And so it was almost kind of like the Republicans and the Democrats. You got to reach across the aisle and become friends. And that's what Gordy did. He had that ability to be friends with everyone, whether you're a player or a reporter, a writer, a young kid. He was a special man.
Couldn't articulate much better, Wayne Gretzky, and that was yesterday, talking about, obviously, firsthand memories of Gordy Howe, Mr. Hockey. We'll hear from Emil Francis, some of his memories growing up with Gordie Howe in Saskatchewan many, many years ago. But we'll get back to the game. Game 6, San Jose Sharks, Pittsburgh Penguins tomorrow. Jamie Baker will join us next. You're listening to Hockey Nation with Gord Stellick on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Well, welcome back to Hockey Nation. Gord Stellick on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. As I mentioned, all kinds of sports going on. Big International Soccer Day. Just saw James Sharman not happy about England's result. Blue Jay fans happy about the result this afternoon. And on the hockey side, we will continue to hear more of the tributes and memories of the passing of Mr. Hockey Gordie Howe yesterday. But we'll also talk about Game 6. We got Stanley Cup final playoff action continuing. It moves to San Jose, and we'll see if the San Jose Sharks can even it up and force a Game 7, or if the Pittsburgh Penguins win the Stanley Cup, and once again for the fourth time on the road. Jamie Baker, of course, we chat with him on many occasions, former Leaf for a little while, but been longtime color analyst for the San Jose Sharks, joining us this afternoon. How are you doing, Jamie?
Gord, doing well. How are you doing?
Excellent. I mentioned a number of times to you that this was the time of year you'd always graciously come on, but normally it would be the about a disappointing element of the San Jose Shark playoffs, right? And this hasn't been the case. It might have been if the Pittsburgh Penguins won game number 5. So maybe talk about the team you've seen all season and all playoffs and what you saw in game 5 and how that you think plays in a positive way game 6.
Well, there's like a few questions in there. The team I saw all year in all playoffs coming into this series has met their match. And it's interesting, like you look at it, like Pittsburgh to me looks like the better team. I mean, you just flat out scoring chances and shot attempts and possession and all of that. They're a faster team. They've really, really impressed me on how disciplined and structured they are defensively. They get back. Like speed isn't good if you're racing all over the place, but their stick position, they take away the passing lanes all over the place. Like watch Thornton, Pavelski, guys coming in the offensive zone, they do the cutback and they're looking for a pass. There's nothing there. It's like in football, when a great defense snuffs out the other team, you know, they control the line of scrimmage, you know, there's no holes for the running back to get the big gains. The wide receivers can't get open and the quarterback gets, you know, he gets sacked, and we saw it last year with the Broncos over the New England Patriots, and that's what it feels like here. Like Pittsburgh's using their speed and their discipline, and they're really strong on the sticks. So I thought in the earlier games they were winning more battles than the Sharks. I think the Sharks have done better job winning battles, 50-50 battles the last two games. But there's no question Pittsburgh's using their speed to, you know, control the lanes and outnumber and Martin Jones, he stole the show in game 5, so they needed him to steal a game. And now I think going into game 6, it's the onus is on the players, the skaters, to play better, to feed off the energy of the crowd. Familiar, you know, the rink dimensions here, just it's a steeper rink. The crowd's kind of right on top of you. They know the ice. They know the boards a little better. And do a better job in the neutral zone. Do a little better job in the defensive zone. And find a way to go win tomorrow's game. And also, like, push their tempo. They haven't controlled. They've controlled the tempo for parts of games, small parts of games. But I'd like to see them push the tempo, kind of control the play and the puck possession for more than 50% of the time tomorrow. Win that, and then you go to game 7. I love home ice. I'd love to have last chance. But if you ask me, would you want home ice or the better goalie? I'll take the better goalie every time.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, Martin Jones, you can't expect him to steal games every game, but you never do know. I mean, you look at whether it's Yaroslav Halak or Giguere years ago or just, you know, whatever, number stories that way. I thought, you know, Jamie, the other really impressive thing was when Pittsburgh made it 2-2 and the momentum had totally changed and you couldn't have had for a worse scenario, they got that all-important third goal. I mean, that's something they hadn't done the previous four games, and I just thought that showed me something from the Sharks that I've seen all season but hadn't been coming to fruition so far this series.
Yeah, and they've been chasing the games for the most part. They were trailing a lot of the games. This was the first, you know, they had the lead. They squandered the lead. And then for about, 4 or 5 minutes after, I was like up, I was watching the press box. I'm like, get it to the break and slow the freaking game down, man. You know, like, take some whistles. Like, just slow it down, the tempo of the game, and then, you know, hopefully win a few faceoffs and then regain the momentum. And that's kind of what happened. Pittsburgh kept coming for about 4 minutes or so, and then Sharks kind of settled back in, and then Melker Carlson got that huge goal. Great game by that line. I thought Couture was the Sharks' best skater of everybody, but that's the resiliency we've seen all year. You know, there's a reason why they were the best road, the most travel among all NHL teams. They're playing in the tough Western Conference, and yet they had the best road record this year, and we kind of saw why. They dug deep. Yes, they relied on their goaltender, but starts with the captain and just trickles through the lineup. This is a group that believes in themselves. They find ways. They have continued to do so, and they did so in Game 5.
Yeah, you know, and you take a look as far as all that goes, and, you know, here we got game number 6 at home. And last matchup, I'm wondering, is there a certain matchup, like poor Roman Polak, I think he's just had some bad luck, for example, but is there a certain defensive matchup or forward matchup you think is critical? Because, I mean, one line is Sidney Crosby, one line is Malkin, one line has the Kessel line, which may be the best line at times as well. Is there something you think Pete DeBoer really wants to get out matchup-wise?
Well, I'll answer this in it's a two-part answer, and I'll say this, it's interesting. Like, the Sharks have met their match from a speed standpoint. Nashville gave them fits a little bit, but Nashville's one, not as fast. Their transition isn't quite as good, and they just don't have that, like, star-powered scoring and the depth. I think their decor might be a little better than Pittsburgh's. It is better than Pittsburgh's. And you could say Pekka Rene is better, but the forwards on this Pittsburgh Penguin team, I mean, it just gives you fits. And to be honest, like, I don't think if you took this Pittsburgh roster, put it in San Jose and San Jose's roster in Pittsburgh, I don't know if either team would be in the Stanley Cup right now. Like, San Jose, the reason they're in the Stanley Cup finals is guys like Roman Polak. He was huge in the LA series and the St. Louis series. Like, you can't, those teams are big, heavy teams, not as fast, but big, heavy, mean teams that lean on you. So this Pittsburgh series is a different type of series. Like, Pittsburgh this year traveled 33,000 miles. The Sharks traveled 54,000 miles. Pittsburgh hadn't been out of their own time zone until this series. It's mid-January. We live out of our time zone, you know? So, you know, we've been to Nashville and then we've been to St. Louis. So different, the way the rosters are built, there's this matchup kind of favors Pittsburgh a little bit from that regard. As far as the D matchups and stuff, you know, I think you want Vlasic out there against Crosby. I still think he's the heart and soul and the engine that really gets this team going more than other guys. But what are you going to say? Like, the HBK line's been phenomenal. Malkin is Malkin. He's really picked up his game the last two games. So the one thing I know is when the when the schedule came out, to be honest, I didn't like it because there was, every time there's travel from east to west or west to east, whenever the teams are traveling, there's 2 days between games. I thought that would be an advantage to Pittsburgh, who aren't used to the travel, aren't used to the time zone change. But I think now, as we've gotten, I was wrong. It's actually been an advantage to the Sharks. They've won now, it's happened 3 times in the playoffs. Going into Game 7 against Nashville, there were 2 days between the games. They got thumped in Game 6 in Nashville. 2 days between games, Sharks thumped them in, I think, 5-0 in Game 7, played one of their best playoff games of the postseason. And then twice in this series, before Games 3 and before Games 5, there were 2 days between games, Sharks won both those games. So, and that's the way it is going out. The marathon is over, man. It's a sprint. It's a two-game sprint. There's 2 days between games. I think Pete DeBoer and his staff can use, Roman Polak sparingly. I think they can use, you know, the fourth line. They've kind of gone down to 10 forwards, you know, halfway through the game. They've used Wingles and Zubra sparingly. So, and then they have to rely on, you know, the other 4 or 5 D. I think whoever you're out there against, you just have to be ultra conscientious. And that's the matchup problems playing against Pittsburgh. I don't think there's one distinct matchup, because Pittsburgh, the flow of these games, there's been times there's 3-4 minutes without a whistle, so you're not always going to have the favorable matchup that you want.
Well, look forward to Game 6 of the sprint tomorrow night. I know you are as well, Jamie. Thanks for making time for us today.
Cheers. Go Sharks. Thanks, Bart.
Okay, thanks, Jamie. Jamie Baker, color analyst for the San Jose Sharks. Meanwhile, when we talk about the tributes to Gordie Howe, one of the neat ones yesterday was Emil Francis, Emil the Cat, longtime executive in the National Hockey League. He grew up with Gordie Howe in Saskatchewan, so he shared some memories yesterday with Darren Millard, Nick Kiprios, Scott Morrison, and myself.
Another one of those kids that grew up in Saskatchewan, Emil. Thank you for taking the time today on a difficult day.
Well, it's real nice being with all you fellows. Good to hear your voices again. Of course, I follow you every chance I get during the hockey season, which is still on, of course. But very nice to be on with you people.
Let us lean on you a little bit. You had the opportunity to grow up with Gordie. What was he like as a child growing up into his teens?
Well, you know, funny thing, he never ever played junior hockey in Saskatchewan. He went to the Ranger camp, and the Rangers at that time were training in Winnipeg. And they sent him home. But the scout in Saskatoon was a fellow by the name of Fred Pinckney. And he's smart enough, he got him out of town and out of Western Canada. And Detroit shipped him off to Galt, Ontario. And there in Galt, they kept him until such time as then they moved him over to Omaha, where he played in the Central League. But Gordie never played junior hockey in Saskatchewan. And, of course, that's how I missed him playing out there. But the first time I seen Gordie Howe, I broke in January with the Chicago Blackhawks, and about the third game we went to Detroit to play Detroit. And here we are playing, and we're in about the second period. This guy's coming on right wing, and he's a right-hand shot. And Johnny Mariucci was our captain of the Blackhawks. He was a veteran. He was 35, 36. So he eased over to, he was right in the middle of the net practically, and I stepped out, and I had one foot on the left side of the goal crease and the other on the right, so I figured myself, I got the perfect spot right now. I got this guy right where I want him. Well, the next thing I know, the guy switched hands on me. He went from shooting right to shooting left, and he caught the far corner just inside the goalpost. As he went around the net, I followed around behind, looking at him. I said to Mariucci, when I get to the other side, I said, who the hell was that guy? And Mariucci says, oh, some kid they just brought up from Detroit. So that was the first time I'd seen him, but it's surely not the last time.
So, Emil, let me get this straight. He goes to the New York Rangers and he gets cut. Are those decision makers, I hope, were out of the game a few years later? That must have been the biggest joke in hockey.
Well, that's a good question because I'd never ever really asked anybody about that, like, you know, but they ended up with Vic Howe a few years later. But, you know, the thing I've never been able to figure out, in those days they must have had sponsored clubs. And, you know, if you get a guy and put him on your sponsor club, like we did with Jill Barrett and Rattel and like Boston did with Bob Yore, then you put him in your sponsor club, you have him sign a card, and he, from then on, is the property of that team that did it, like, you know. So I don't know how they ever let him get out of Winnipeg, I'll tell you.
Well, I'll tell you.
They had a junior team in Winnipeg. They had a junior team in Prince Albert. And they had a junior team in Flin Flon that they sponsored. So I'm sure they could have found a spot for him there somewhere.
Yeah, and Terry Sawchuk, I guess, escaped to Detroit as well from Winnipeg. You know, you could have used him as GM of the New York Rangers all those years later. But Gordie Howe, growing up with him, Emil, we had Mike Babcock on. Mike Babcock said, look, I talk hockey and fishing with him. We've heard stories that Gordie Howe was friends with, say, Al Kaline, and could hit batting practice and hit home
he
runs.
Did.
And
he
Tigers.
Did.
Okay,
oh, yeah.
So what kind of athlete was he?
Oh, he was a great all-around athlete, and here's what happened. All the years I played hockey, of course, I played baseball, and from the age 24 on, I was a manager, playing manager, and we played in the Canadian American League with Bismarck and Minot and in the North Dakota League, an interlocking schedule. And Gordie came back to Saskatoon in the summer, and they had him playing with the Saskatoon Commodores in that league. And he played in that league for about 3 weeks. And then Jack Adams found out about it. Well, that was the end of his baseball career in Saskatoon. They stopped him from playing. And I played against him 3-4 times, and he was a good ball player, and he could hit. But here's the payoff. Later, after they stopped him from playing, we were on our way back from Minot. And we're going by the Cairnsfield ballpark. That's where we played all our games at that time. And the place is packed, and there's cars everywhere. So I pull a car over. We used to travel four to a car. And I run into the ballpark to see what's going on. Well, there was a fastball team, and you fellas probably heard of it, the King and His Court.
Yep.
There was a guy that was a pitcher, and he had three players. So it was a four-man team. So I walk in the ballpark, I look, and the place is jammed, and who do you think happens to be at the plate but Gordie Howe? So they brought him out there like to play against the king and his court. And I arrived just at the time he comes up at the plate. And it was a baseball park, but they were playing this game there. And right field in that ballpark was 290 feet. And beyond that wall, which was a high wall, like about 15 feet, there was a railway tracks, and there was that's where all the trains are parked, and they go back and forth. Well, the first pitch he threw behind Gordy, and the next pitch he threw through his legs. And I'm watching this like, no, because that guy's full of tricks. I'd played against him later on. But anyway, the next pitch, Gordy hits the ball over the fence. And like I said, it was 290 feet to that fence, and he put it right over that fence. I couldn't believe it, and the crowd went crazy. But he was an all-around athlete, and he could golf. He could hit the golf ball a mile. I played golf with him several times, and he embarrassed you how far he could hit the ball.
Emil, could he have been the first two-sport athlete before Bo Jackson? Could he have played pro ball?
I would say so.
The king, by the way, was Eddie Fainer.
Eddie Fainer, the king in his court, Eddie Fainer.
That was him.
And you know, he was pitching right up here two, three years ago. He was the late 60s. He toured all across this country and all through the U.S.
Well, he's the Gordie Howe of baseball, I suppose.
Yes, he was. You should have seen his right arm. His right arm was twice as big as his left arm because he used to pitch every day, you know.
Tell us about Gordie the hockey player. What, in your estimation, made him so special?
Well, I'll tell you, he was practically impossible to stop. I mean, when you played against him, you know, you made sure that you always had your best checking left winger out there, and you always made sure you had your best defensive player on that side against him. You always had two guys on a one, and you couldn't out-muscle that guy. I mean, he'd keep him under control for a certain length of time, and all of a sudden somebody would come back and their nose would be on the opposite side of where it should be, like, you know. That's where he got the name Elbows. But he was such a big, strong guy, like, you know, he was like nonchalant. He didn't seem to bother anybody unless you bothered him, because he didn't have to bother anybody. He's a guy that you had to watch. But I would watch him after practice every chance I got. And it's the same old story, like, you know, he had a lot of natural ability, but he never stopped working. He'd be the first guy on the ice to practice. He'd be the last guy on the ice to practice. He'd be out there with a bucket of pucks. And without looking, he'd be shooting from every different angle, coming down the right side, along the boards, in the corner. All he did was just keep shooting pucks at the net, shooting pucks at the net, because I think that's first and foremost in his head. In order to score goals, you got to shoot at the net. And who was going to move him out from the front of the net? I mean, in those days, like, you know, and I must have said 1,000 times when I coached, let's see if they can score laying on their back in front of our net. In other words, knock them on their behind, like, you know. But who's going to knock him down? Lou Fontanet tried one time. I wasn't there, but he tried one time. I seen the film of it, to go after Gordy. And Gordy just anchored his foot behind the boards and got Lou leading right over there and just beat the crap out of him. And Fontanet was a big guy, but Hall was a big, tough guy, believe me.
Gotta love Emil the Cat Francis. One of my favorites. Was general manager of the New York Rangers, the St. Louis Blues, the Hartford Whalers, but grew up a childhood friend of Gordie Howe. Sharp as anything. It was great catching. I'm glad he told the baseball stuff, because I felt, am I imagining things? Because we had Mike Babcock on earlier and he didn't remember any baseball stuff, but I saw Al Kaline, the Tiger great, was on Sportsnet as well. And yeah, they were buddies. Gordie would take batting practice with the Detroit Tigers. And all that good stuff. So great memories. We'll come back. Scotty Bowman will share some more. We'll preview game number 6 as well. Hockey Nation with Gord Stellick on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Your dinner dates are here. And they're hungry. Gord Stellick, Todd Halushko. This is Hockey Nation on Toronto Sports Radio. Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Welcome back, Hockey Nation. Gord Stellick with you this afternoon. One more hour, we're counting down. We heard earlier from Jamie Baker of the San Jose Sharks broadcast crew. We'll hear from Phil Bourque from the Pittsburgh Penguin broadcast crew. Of course, game 6 tomorrow night. We'll have all that for you on the Fan Radio Network. Find out if the Pittsburgh Penguins win the Stanley Cup, this time on the road. It would be the fourth time they would win it on the road. And or the San Jose Sharks, can they force a game number 7? And, of course, joining us, a gentleman very familiar with Stanley Cup victories, had a couple with the Pittsburgh Penguins as well, along with many, many others in his Hall of Fame career. He joined us yesterday to chat about Mr. Hockey Gordie Howe as well. Scotty Bowman, Hall of Famer, senior advisor to the Chicago Blackhawks, joining us. How are you, Scotty?
I'm good, thank you.
You know, first want to start with Wayne Gretzky, Scotty, because yesterday you joined us, and, you know, I found it was interesting, with Gordie Howe, I found it was interesting you talked about an All-Star game, of all things, being that kind of memory, the little things that off the ice, and something that we wouldn't know of or be aware of, but he was forever grateful about what you did for him in the NHL All-Star team.
Well, you know, he played the 1 year in Hartford. That was his final season. And I'm not sure at the time when it happened, but there might have been a Hartford Whaler player that was having a banner season. And in those years, like, they picked the six players. And then after that, the coaching staff could pick the balance. So, you know, and they didn't have a representative, and every team had to be represented. So, I mean, I didn't think it was any issue. I said, well, Gordie Howe's playing in Hartford. He's a regular. He did score 15 goals, not up to that time, but by the end of the season, and he had 40-something points. So he was having a decent year, and I just thought it'd be easy to put him on the team. And when we put him on, it was not a lot of people, but some people thought, well, why should he be there? Some other player deserves it and all that. But as soon as before the game started, when they did the formal pregame introductions, I never heard an ovation like that. And then, of course, he got another one out when he got an assist on the winning goal in the third period. So it was quite a night for Detroit and also for all hockey fans and obviously for Gordie.
Yeah, that All-Star game was in Detroit, as you mentioned, so quite an ovation. And, Scotty, when you talk about the greats, and so you wouldn't have coached against him a ton, I don't think, but a little bit, but just watching him as well.
Yeah, I coached in St. Louis from 67. He left Detroit in 72, so.
Yeah, about five years,
four
okay.
Seasons. Yeah, maybe, yeah.
Okay, so he's still pretty well, kind of in his prime then. What was it about Gordie Howe on the ice that made him a great player? How do you differentiate him for, say, you know, Lemieux, Gretzky, or those kind of guys, the Rocket? What was unique about Gordie?
Well, in Gordie's era, especially during his prime years, the game was much different than it is today. There was actually no European players. If you were a right winger, you just patrolled up and down the right side. You very seldom cut over in the middle or cut on, obviously never went to the left wing side. And I think the fact that Gordie and Ted Lindsay, they must have played together. I'm not exactly sure when Gordie was injured the first year when he came into the league. He suffered an injury, I think around 1948, missed the playoffs. And then when I think he and Ted Lindsay played together for maybe 10 years, they had different centermen. They started off, they had Sid Abel. He left after a couple of years. They had a guy named Earl Dutch Rival, who was a very smart player. And then Alex Delvecchio, when he broke in his career, he broke in. He was the center on that line. But the way he played, he was up and down his wing. He was so powerful along the boards. He and Ted Lindsay had worked out plays at the Olympia, where I remember many, many occasions, if Lindsay was carrying the puck up the left side, he angled that puck to his end boards. There were certain boards that Lindsay or Howe could hit that board and the puck would come right out in front. So if Lindsay threw it in to the right wing side, like the right corner, it came out and Gordie would be barreling in. So I just remember watching he in his prime. Detroit had such a great team from those seven seasons, and they finished first place, and they won the four cups. You know, they had the 1 year where they swept. I think it was in 52. They never lost a game. They won. It was a two series. They won eight straight. Maybe that's the year they never got a goal scored on them in Detroit. And goals were scarce in those years. And Gordie never got 50. He got 49 one year, and I'm not sure who the next guy got about 30.
Yeah, he had 43, 47, and 49 in those three seasons that you're talking about, Scotty. And what was it about, guys kept referring almost about the ambidextrous, but the ability to almost shoot both ways, to switch hands and surprise you with a decent and pretty effective shot?
Yeah, he was one of a kind. Gordie had a short stick. His stick came up mid-chest. He didn't have a long stick. And I think it was so powerful that he could he could shoot right, and then the odd time if he had to move and wanted to go left, I mean, a lot of players have maybe tried it a little bit, but he actually could shoot a puck left side. I mean, he could shoot not as good as on his right side. The players didn't shoot like they do today. We didn't have the equipment or anything else. But, yeah, he didn't switch around a lot. A lot of times, though, you saw him in the warm-up, when he warmed up before the game, he would skate around with a left hand down low. And like, just not when there was any drills or anything, but he must have liked to switch over when he felt like it, you know?
Scotty Bowman joining Gord Stellick on Hockey Nation on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. And in your days in Montreal, you would have seen a lot of great players, Hall of Famers around, like a Jean Béliveau, for example. How was it in Detroit? Obviously, you came full circle about the presence and how they, you know, maybe melded with your players from time to time. How did you use that tradition?
You mean Gordy?
Gordy and other guys. Just who were the in Detroit? Who were the guys that came around a lot? I know Ted Lindsay's there quite a bit, but about having that kind of great Hall of Fame presence.
Ted was around all the time because he used to come down to the room, to the exercise room, and work out. Gordy came most of the time in the playoffs, especially after Mark returned, when Mark Howe signed with the Red Wings, maybe the 92, something like that. I went in 93, and he'd been there a year, and Gordy came around quite a bit. He spent a lot of time around Detroit at that time, and he would come in the playoffs, always at the rink, he'd even come in the room sometimes, and he always searched out somebody he was welcome, obviously. I mean, a player like that, he would talk to everybody. He didn't always look for the top guys. Like, I remember when we had Draper and Maltby and McCarty, he got a kick out of that line. They were kind of like a checking line. And he had a pretty good rapport with both Chris Draper and Kurt Maltby, for sure.
Looking at right now Pittsburgh and all your Stanley Cups and your career, it wasn't a long time in Pittsburgh, but obviously a fond memory that you were there in one position, then Bob Johnson passed away, you take over as the head coach, and probably a unique and different but very rewarding challenge that time in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, well, Bob was a great coach. It's just such a tragedy that he couldn't continue. People don't realize when Bob Johnson took over the Penguins in 1990, I think the year before they missed the playoffs. I mean, it was just a complete turnaround. They made some good changes. You know, they added fellows like Joey Mullen. We made the trade to get Ron Francis and Alf Samuelson, and then Larry Murphy came along partway through a year. We always seemed to make the right trade at the right time, but Bob Johnson molded the team in 1991. He was an offensive type of coach that really enjoyed his forte was offensive hockey, especially the power play. And he had the guns. He had Paul Coffey in defense. He had Mario Lemieux in just really probably around his fifth or sixth season. And Mario didn't have much support when he first started. You know, when Mario was number one pick, obviously the Penguins were the worst team in the league when they got Mario, so that's how they got him. So, you know, Bob is an offensive guy, and I when I was asked to take over just to hold the job, hopefully till he maybe would recover, which he didn't, I didn't do very much the first season. I just wanted to, whatever Bob would have done, he ran practices the same way. But he was ahead of his time, Bob Johnson, because he liked offensive hockey, and I think that's what was coming into the league because of the Edmonton Oilers. Like, you know, the league changed around. After the Islanders won their four cups, in 80, 81, 82, 83, the Oilers took over, and they were a real offensive team. And I think Bob was in Calgary some of those years before he went to Pittsburgh, and, you know, he must have felt that's the way we should go, and he was way ahead of his time.
Scotty, you look now, you've been there tasting the Stanley Cup, close to it. If you're the Pittsburgh, a team that's up like the Pittsburgh Penguins and want to get that momentum back, what is the key? And on the San Jose Sharks key side, what is the key when you're the underdog, but you've got a little bit of momentum and you want to sustain it?
Well, I'm anxious to see if these 2 days, if it's going to benefit San Jose. They really looked like a team that was pretty tired the other night. You know, people don't realize the grind of this 2-month marathon, because you know, they did dispose of L.A. Kings pretty quickly and not a lot of travel. But then again, if you the next two series were really tough series. Seven-game series with Nashville, mostly close games. Two trips to Nashville. It's not an overnight. I mean, it's not an overnight trip, but 4 or 5 hours. And then they had the same thing against St. Louis, you know, another seven-game series. And I think it kind of caught up to them. But maybe this extra day, because Pittsburgh's got a lot of energy with some of the new guys. Their offense is spread out. They're a very tough team to handle. They've been so difficult for all their opponents in the playoffs because Coach Mike Sullivan, like he's got Crosby with Sheary and Hornquist. I mean, they're not bad players, but they're not top end guys. And then that line he put together, which has been terrific. With Bonino at center and the way Kessel's been playing and Hagelin. And then you see he's got Malkin with on another line with a real experienced guy, Kunitz. And sometimes he puts Kunitz and Malkin up with Crosby, but not very often. So if you're San Jose, you're faced with a tough situation. I mean, you know, most teams have one big pair defenseman, and that's what they're hoping Vlasic is, and he's done a good job. But he can't play against everybody. And I look tomorrow night that home ice is gonna give a little more energy to San Jose. I was completely surprised that Martin Jones could play a game like that. And I can he do it again? That's because I think you'll see Pittsburgh come out tomorrow night and really try to finish it, play it like a seventh game. Because, I mean, even though you have home ice comfort a seventh game, you don't want to get there. You know, you really want to try. I mean, if you have to get there, you have to get there. But I thought that Martin Jones, really, for a goaltender without a lot of experience, absolutely stole that game.
Scotty, just want to get back to where we started. Just looking quickly, Gordie Howe. And, you know, you look at, the 20-year time back when he played with the Red Wings. Six times he was a Hart Trophy winner as the MVP. 20 times an All-Star, either first or second team All-Star, not in the All-Star game, but and would be Andy Bathgate, I guess, Rocket Richard would be the other right wingers he would be competing against. Yep. I mean, I don't know anyone that stacks up that way as far as longevity and excellence goes.
No, I think the record that we'll look on in history is the 20 consecutive seasons finishing in the top five scoring. That, to me, is a record that, I mean, a lot of players play 15, 18 years, but, I mean, you know, your play goes down a little bit after you're maybe, you know, 10, 12 years in the league. But, Gordy, to play 20 years in a 16 league and get be in the top five scorers is amazing. That's a record that, I mean, Wayne has a lot of records that will never be broken for sure. I think that's one record that Gordy Howe will have nobody else will touch.
Do you have an off-ice favorite memory about Gordy Howe?
Well, no, just the fact that he's the same with everybody. Like, you know, he likes to fool around. He likes to clown around. And, you know, he's the kind of guy that likes to rub elbows with people and give you a little shot now and again. But, no, the only thing I felt with Gordy is every time I would meet him, even 10 years after the game in 1980, 10, 15 years later, he'd always bring up that All-Star game, and that's what I remember the most. Is you don't know when you do things like that, but he appreciated so much coming back to Detroit because he hadn't been there since '72. He left on very ill terms, and he came back, and he was welcomed like nobody else.
Great memories on the ice and off the ice. Scotty, thanks very much for joining us, sharing the memories. Really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. Bye.
Okay. Scotty Bowman joining us, a senior advisor for the Chicago Blackhawks and, of course, Hall of Famer as well. Interesting, and Scotty just made the quote about Martin Jones, and he just said, I didn't know if Martin Jones could play that well, that level of excellence, and certainly earlier we talked to Jamie Baker about that as well, and he's saying the San Jose Sharks, whether it's Logan Couture, who had a great game the other night, just guys in general have to play that way. You can't expect Martin Jones to be stealing two more games like you did game number five. Bill Ranford is a goalie coach for Los Angeles Kings, and we're trying to connect with him, hoping we can get him on. Because you look at Martin Jones, this guy was undrafted. He played with the Calgary Hitmen of the Western Hockey League, And then he kind of followed Jonathan Bernier in as the minor leaguer and then backup with the Los Angeles Kings. So earned his stripes that way and comes up. And obviously the San Jose Sharks feel that he is the guy that can get things on track for them. And certainly he did that in game number 5. Phil Bork is also going to drop by and we'll chat with him and see what he thinks about the Pittsburgh Penguins, who he covers. There was a lot of excitement, a lot of hope about game number 5.
Well, John, the Blue Jays offense broke.
Winning it on home ice as far as that goes, and it didn't happen. So game number 6, we'll see what he thinks in San Jose. And Wayne Gretzky, we're hearing memories from different people about the one and only Mr. Hockey, Gordie Howe, and they had a very unique relationship. He had joined us yesterday. We heard some last hour. We'll hear some more a little bit later on. Who better to talk about Mr. Hockey than the one and only Wayne Gretzky? That's all coming up. You're listening to Hockey Nation with Gord Stellick on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
And yes, if you are wondering, Eddie Olchuk is part of the Belmont Stakes coverage, so that's why he is not available to in Hockey Nation, our regular weekly visit with Eddie O. Gord Stellick with you, Hockey Nation on Sportsnet. 590 The Fan, and a couple of big topics we are talking about. Of course, a day after, we've had many sharing memories of the one and only Mr. Hockey, Gordie Howe. And as I mentioned, it was a tough week with Muhammad Ali last week and yesterday while his funeral was going on, and then finding out that Gordie Howe had passed away at the age of 88. So certainly two sports icons and larger-than-life icons in different ways. We lose them in the past week, so we'll hear more about that from Wayne Gretzky a little bit later on. We also get set for Game 6 tomorrow night, Pittsburgh Penguins against the San Jose Sharks, and certainly something that, 31 of 32 times the team that has had the 3-1 lead in games in the Stanley Cup Final has won. Only once in 32 occasions. That was back in 1940. It was the Toronto Maple Leafs who were down 0-3 to the Detroit Red Wings, came back, won the next 4 games. That was able to do it. So that's something, the odds certainly stacked against the San Jose Sharks. And in chatting with Jamie Baker, obviously Martin Jones was the key, his kind of performance in game number 5, but also looking at the likes of Logan Couture and the big guns. And I know Craig Simpson said on our broadcast about the fact that it wasn't that the Sharks got a 1-goal lead. It was also the guy that scored the goal, that being Brent Burns, and then a 2-0 lead. And then very quickly, it was 2-2. Matter of fact, fastest 4 goals in a Stanley Cup final game ever. And then basically 3-2, and the San Jose Sharks hang on for the win. So game 6 tomorrow night. Phil Bork, we've been having him on our network coverage as well, covers the Pittsburgh Penguins, radio analyst, and covering the Stanley Cup Final for them, joining Gord Stellick this afternoon. How you doing, Phil?
Good, Gordy. I actually just got back to the hotel from practice. Penguins had a very spirited skate this afternoon preparing for Game 6.
Yeah, what's the mindset there, given, you know, the hope was Game 5, it would have been a perfect story, and then it's a trip you really didn't want to take?
No, that's fair enough. I mean, everything was lined up. You're right, the hype was there. The champagne was on ice, the whole shebang. You know, it would have been a great story. It really would have been. You almost felt like, you know, the city of Pittsburgh's been through a lot of heartbreak as far as Penguins playoffs over the last few years. And, you know, being this little blue-collar southwestern Pennsylvania town, you almost felt like they deserved to have at least one championship. But it wasn't to be. And, you know, I'll be honest with you. It's par for the course for us. We are the Penguinis. We don't do anything easy. And I know in 92 we won 4 straight against the Hawks, but it just seems like that's not the way it's supposed to go. It's supposed to be the most, you know, heart-wrenching, gut-kicking thing you ever go through in your whole life. And, you know, we don't do things the easy way.
Well, you know, you can look at it two ways, right? You can say the Penguins are up 3-2, which obviously is a plus. But really, you could argue the Penguins have outplayed the San Jose Sharks all 5 games.
No, and to kind of get back to your last question, I should have finished it off by saying what is the mindset of the club? And, you know, just being around the boys today, I got to interview Patrick Hornquist, and, you know, they've really boiled it down. And this isn't just wishful thinking, but you start to stroke the positive, and you're right, that they easily could have won this 4 straight or finish it off in 5. They deserve to. They played well enough too, but that
isn't always the way it works, especially in the Stanley Cup final, because it's a pretty good club over there on the other side. But the mindset is it's a hockey game. You know, you have to boil it down to that. You can't think about it's to win the Stanley Cup. You know it is, but you can't talk about that. You can't. You almost have to convince yourself this is a road game. It's the biggest road game of the season. For 2.5, 3 hours, however it's going to take, it's a hockey game. Go out and win one hockey game. That's kind of the mindset of the club right now. And being on the road, it's almost like you dig a big hole, you jump in there. It's a, you know, it's a in the trenches, in the bunker type of mentality, all for one, one for all, and let's just win a hockey game. We know what's going to be at the end of the rainbow if we win this game, but let's not, you know, getting the cart before the horse, and let's not think about the cup too much without taking care of the details.
Yeah, and your colleague on the San Jose Sharks side, Jimmy Baker, I mean, basically it's understood. Martin Jones can't be expected to play that way every game.
No, he was outstanding. And I'll be honest with you, he's an outstanding goaltender. But when's the last time we got to the Stanley Cup final, Gordy, and we're like, well, you know, the one goaltender in this series is not so good. I mean, of course he's going to be good. I didn't expect him to be that good. The challenge will be for him to try to duplicate that. And the Penguins are going to try to make life as miserable as they can for him. And I think if they take his eyeballs away, and that's the one thing you hear more than anything nowadays, you see a lot of goals scored that way, is to get that, you know, the catchphrase that we use so much in the media, net front presence. I remember just screening the goalie back when I played and just get in front of him and take his eyes away. Because I don't care how good of a goaltender you are, you got somebody in your grill, whether it's an opponent or your own defenseman trying to block a shot. You can't stop what you can't see.
Yeah, that's funny. When did screening become net front presence? Right, everything's got to have a more serious or complicated sounding terminology. So on the other side, you know, it's funny or interesting, Muhammad Ali and all these tributes, and you forget he was 22 when he beat Sonny Liston the first time. I mean, you know, both maturity-wise in the ring and the maturity-wise in his larger-than-life personality. And, you know, Matt Murray's 22, which is young, particularly with his lack of NHL experience before this year. What about the pressure on him, what have you? I've always been impressed that he tends to play things down when he wins, and when he doesn't, I like his confidence. He exudes confidence.
Yeah, I don't think it's just lip service. I think that's just his DNA. It's who he is. That I don't know if it's ice water in the veins or, you know, I'd love to know his family a little bit more and understand where it all comes from, but it's the real deal. I mean, this isn't some flash in the pan. This isn't some kid just kind of living some kind of storybook story. And he's the real deal. And, you know, Mike Lang, who I call the games with, said it perfectly. It's such a simple way to say it. He was born to be a goalie. You think about it, 6'4", he's got these extra long arms and legs and that muscle between the ears. And his DNA is that of, okay, I can't take that back out of the net. It went in the net, whether bad bounce or it got through me or whatever. Okay, let's make the next save. And he did that. I mean, you can blame him for the first couple goals in game five where he wasn't really at his best. Not the first couple, but a couple in there. The Carlson goal and also the Burns goal, or ones that probably he should have had. But then after that, he was really good. So when he says after the game, you know, critique your own game, he says, well, I thought I was pretty good. Well, he was pretty good. You know, we just make so much out of a goaltender letting a leaky one through. And you know what? Martin Jones might like let a couple leaky ones in tomorrow night. They're human. You know, there's a lot on these guys. But as a 22-year-old, you're right. He is just, he's so well put together and he's just so composed. And, you know, his bounce back ability, the numbers don't lie.
Is there, I mean, the whole Marc-Andre Fleury possibility, do you think that's done now?
What do you mean possibility?
Putting Murray on a short leash in game six. If you lose game six, Fleury playing in game seven. Or do you think this is like a starting
Absolutely
pitch?
Not.
Okay.
No, Gordy, it's his ball. It's his ball. And he's going to either take it into the end zone or not. I mean, that's the reality of the situation. Listen, Marc-Andre Fleury's played, what, one game since the end of March? I mean, that wouldn't be fair. It almost wouldn't be fair to him, you know, to thrust him into this situation. I don't think Matt Murray is going to stumble. You know, and who knows what's going to happen tomorrow night. I mean, the Penguins could win the Stanley Cup or we could be playing for a game seven on Wednesday. I mean, it is what it is. It's sport and it's great. And, you know, as far as Marc-Andre Fleury, I think that'll all be addressed in the offseason. We'll see what happens next year. But in the meantime, I think the Penguins and as well as myself, we're just in the moment. And the moment is, it's Matt Murray time.
Hey, Phil, just because we talk and you always got a lot of candor throughout the season, and it was really a work in progress and a struggle in progress for a while for the Pittsburgh Penguins. And now, like, you talk to anybody and they go, wow, you know what? The San Jose Sharks, this is they haven't met a team like Pittsburgh in the Western Conference run through the playoffs. Nobody would have met a team like Pittsburgh. All of a sudden, you meet your match and then some. When did you get a sense that it really had turned, that this, what we're seeing now, was becoming the new reality?
Well, I've been asked that question quite a bit, and I've kind of gone through the Penguins' schedule trying to come down to that landmark moment, and there really isn't one, Gordy. It's just a slow build, a slow culmination. I mean, I could give you the laundry list of key moments, which you've probably already documented, whether it's, you know, the young kids like Sheary and Kuhnhackl and Rust and Murray all coming up, the trades that Jimmy Rutherford made, you know, for Daly and Hagelin and bringing in Justin Schultz. I mean, you can talk about all that, but, you know, it's just been this slow build, you know, and really it seems like more interviews I do like this, more of the questions that I answer, I end up circling around and coming back to Mike Sullivan, because he kind of is the ice general. You know, he's the guy that kind of has laid everything out, so you can talk about the personnel and you have to give the players credit. But I think the one thing that's really turned this around is Mike Sullivan's come in with a passion, a sense of communication, whether it's with the role players, the muckers, the grinders, but more importantly with the star players. He has their attention. He's been able to hold them accountable, got them to get composed and play better than they probably think they can play, which is a challenge for any coach. But Sully is a guy that he doesn't coach out of fear for his job, Gordy. You know, he believes in himself. He has a conviction in what he says. And he knows if they buy into what he's saying, they will win. And that's the biggest sell right there, is to try to sell something to star players, and it is results-driven. If you can get W's from what you're saying, you can get the stars to buy in, all the other dominoes seem to fall after that.
Want to let you get back and join things getting set for tomorrow, but one thing on the broadcast side, since you mentioned Mike Lang, like, okay, all the sayings and that, I mean, how does he have a list, a go-to list? Is it spontaneous? I mean, it's got to be, you got to be chuckling from time to time. It's certainly exciting and ramped up when the playoffs are going, but how does that whole system work that you never know what to expect but from your play-by-play guy?
Nobody's ever asked me that. I'm glad you finally did. He does kind of jot some stuff down that he hasn't used in a while. He has a bit of a mental Rolodex. I have a funny feeling that he has an old cigar box or an old shoe box stuck in the back of a closet somewhere with them all written down on these little pieces of paper, and he kind of goes through. But I do notice, I glance over his notepad every once in a while, and he has three or four jotted down that he hasn't used in a while. So I have no idea. I haven't asked him. I'm not going to ask him what he might be able to have if the Penguins win tomorrow night, but I'm sure he's prepared. I'm sure it'll be something that you'll have a big smile across your face if he's able to pull it out.
He's made it tough for, is it redheaded stepchildren?
That's the one. No, he would never use that. Come on, that's one that we use in the bar.
Okay.
No, he uses, beat him like a rented mule.
Rented mule now. Okay, whatever. Just used to have the old ones, that kind of thing, way back when. Well, we're looking forward. We'll find out what. And he talks about all that's going on, everything going on. So looking forward to it tomorrow night. And I know you're hoping for Mike Lang calls and many of those calls as well. Hey, Phil, I know it's a busy day. Always appreciate it. Thanks for making time.
Okay, Gordy. You know, anytime you want to call me, I'll come on your show. You know that. I enjoyed this. It was good hockey talk.
Thanks very much. Always good hockey talk when Phil Bourque joining us, talking about those Pittsburgh Penguins. Interesting. And also, we'll have it on the network tomorrow night, Mike Lang and his it's kind of like Randy Mulder did throughout the years as far as that play-by-play voice, but also many others there. So we'll find out. I get such a kick out of his calls, and Pittsburgh Penguin fans hoping they can get a kick out of his calls tomorrow night, game number 6. And we'll go back now from covering that game right now. Earlier, Jamie Baker joined us on the San Jose Sharks side. Appreciate Phil Bourque dropping by on the Pittsburgh Penguins side. But as mentioned yesterday, Gordie Howe, Mr. Hockey, we lost him at the age of 88. And right away on The Fan and on Sportsnet, a number of tribute shows and guests joined us. Yesterday, I was fortunate to be on air with Darren Millard, Scott Morris, and Nick Kyprios, and myself.
And the one, there were so many great guests covering all different eras. We had Scotty Bowman on earlier this hour. Just so many different facets on the ice and off the ice of Gordie Howe, but probably none with a better perspective than a guy like Wayne Gretzky, who just grew up idolizing him, then becoming great friends. And he spoke for a long time yesterday, and he just said the stories just kept coming and coming and the memories. So I want to share a little bit from Wayne Gretzky joining us yesterday afternoon, his memories and tribute to Gordie Howe. Darren Millard asked the first question, but it's myself, Nick Kyprios, and Scott Morrison as well.
He's linked to several longtime National Hockey League teammates, and as well as those that that played against him. And one of those is Wayne Gretzky, the man that went on to break a lot of Gordie Howe's longtime records and all-time records. And Wayne joins us now. And first, give you the stage, Wayne, to offer your thoughts on the passing of Gordie Howe.
Oh, wow. I don't even know where to begin, because obviously it's a sad day for not only his family, but for the millions of fans that had an opportunity to see him play over the years, and for the thousands of people that got to shake his hand, to how nice and how humble he really was as a person. It's crazy how the world works, you know. In the last 7 days, we've lost two of the not only greatest athletes who ever lived, but two of the nicest people that you'd ever want to meet, that understood their responsibility for their sport and for what they believed in life. And Gordie Howe was truly a big impact in the hockey world, as Muhammad Ali was to the boxing world. So it's just a crazy week. And as I said, athletes come along, and 10 years from now, there'll be another great hockey player and probably another great boxer. But we don't have people that replace people like Gordie Howe and Muhammad Ali, just real special men who happened to love their sport that transcended life. And, you know, I was fortunate enough to be able to say, and not too many kids get to say that their idol became a friend, and Gordie and I obviously became good friends.
You got the chance to meet him for the first time, I believe, when you were 10 at a sports banquet. Was that moment as awe-inspiring as the first time you got to skate with him, be on the ice with him?
Oh, it was probably more influential. I was 10 years old. I remember thinking, wow, I'm going to get a chance to meet Gordie Howe. And I was, listen, my whole life was around Gordie Howe. When you're a kid, you dream and you have all these ambitions and goals, and you have idols, and Gordie was my idol. And sometimes when you meet your idol, it's not great. Everyone has bad days, and I remember my dad said to me, how was it meeting Gordie Howe? And I said, oh, my God, he's bigger and better and nicer, and he was everything I ever imagined and more. A gentleman and somebody who obviously had a huge impact on not only my life, but my entire family. He was great to my dad and my mom. He was kind to people who were around him. And my dad always says, if you ever look at Gordie Howe's signature, you can read exactly what it says. It says Gordie Howe. And he said, you know, if he can take the time to write a signature, each and every player or athlete in this day and age should be able to write the name properly and not scribble it. So obviously he was a big part of not only my life, but my entire family.
We just saw, Wayne, that famous picture from that banquet of you and Gordie, and he's got the stick around your throat posing for it. What was going through your mind at that point?
I was so scared. Let me tell you, I was so nervous standing there beside him, thinking, oh, my goodness. And ironically, I don't think I've ever told the story that it was sort of Gordie that orchestrated the picture, and he was the one that said, okay, kid, stand here, and I'm going to do this, and just look at the camera. And if he would have told me to jump in the pool with my suit on, I probably would have done that. So I was pretty enamored by him, but oh, my goodness, it seems like that picture was taken yesterday. Obviously, I got to reenact the picture, I think, in 1989. We did redo a picture of the two of us that was similar to that, that obviously didn't have the same impact as the first one, but... I've been talking a lot today about Gordy, and I didn't really realize how many thousands of stories I have, from playing, going fishing with him, to playing an all-star game with him, to watch. And I can remember one time I went to watch his two boys play for Detroit Junior Red Wings against the Brantford Majors, which was a Tier 2 junior team in Brantford, and Gordy came to the game, and I purposely sat a row right in front of him, and I think I stared at him throughout the whole game just to be able to marvel at him. But just a really special man, and I played in a charity golf tournament in the Greater Hartford Open, and I played with Sammy Davis Jr., Gordie Howe, and Sam Snead. And somebody said to me, you know, that Sam Snead, he can be a little bit testy and a little bit grumpy. And I was so nervous. I was a 19-year-old kid, and Gordie had invited me down to play in the tournament. And one of the guys who was there said, don't worry about that. Mr. Snead's a little intimidated by Gordie Howe. I remember thinking, okay, I'm okay. I got Gordie with me. But I got so many stories. And, you know, I was so fortunate to become friends with him over the years, and how humble he was. And what was intriguing to me is how recognizable he was. At a young age, we walked to an airport, and everybody knew Gordie Howe. And Gordie always would stop, and he was always in a suit and tie. He'd always sign autographs, always took pictures. Canadian and a special man.
Wayne, there's no question that there's a deeper connection between players that carry the torch somewhat of being at the top of their game, and we see it in other sports as well. But when did you first realize that Gordie could be more than just, you know, an acquaintance, and that the friendship could go deeper? And how often did you lean on that friendship when it came to certain things like advice?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I got so many stories. I remember one time I just turned pro. I signed my contract in, I guess, June, and it was early July. We were at a charity dinner in Kitchener, Ontario. And I remember it like it was yesterday. My dad and I went, and Gus Bedelli had arranged for me to be part of the event. Although I didn't have to speak, Gord came in this nice black limousine, and I remember thinking, wow, that's pretty cool. And so anyway, we did the dinner, and Gordy and I chatted, and the only thing he told me that night is, now you're signed, you got to work even that much harder. And as we were pulling out there, my dad had this old car, and it wouldn't start. And Gordy came walking out, and he said, kid, the first thing you do when you turn pro is you got to buy your mom and dad a new car. Next day, I went and bought my dad a car. So, you know, he was always comfortable with people. He loved people. I remember there was a gentleman in Edmonton named Mick Ma, who owned part of the Edmonton Oil Kings in the 70s, and he owned a Chinese restaurant, the Blue Willow. And every time Gordy would go to Edmonton, he'd always go there for dinner to sit and talk to Vic and his wife, Esther. He never missed going to the restaurant, because when you became a friend of Gordy's, you were a friend for life. I was saying earlier, you know, some parts of the game have changed a little bit. One of the things that's changed is the relationship between the athletes and the media. And you look at time and time again over the years, Gordy was good friends with, you know, Danny Gallivan and Dick Irvin and Frank Orr from the Toronto Star, and Falls from the Detroit Free Press, and Dick Beddoes in Hamilton. He went fishing with those guys. He spent time with those guys. They truly were friends with Gordy. And so it was almost kind of like the Republicans and the Democrats. You got to reach across the aisle and become friends. And that's what Gordy did. He had that ability to be friends with everyone, whether you're a player or a reporter, a writer, a young kid. He was a special man.
Wayne Gretzky, and you know what? Better guy, the great one, talking about the great one, or the great one talking about Mr. Hockey. And he was yesterday on Sportsnet. We did a tribute show, kind of impromptu on the fly, and it really was well and was interesting to hear from so many different people about the connection they have with Mr. Hockey, Gordie Howe. And, of course, Wayne Gretzky has it on so many different levels, from him being his idol and then a friend and then breaking some of his records. So it was great hearing from Wayne Gretzky. Detroit Red Wings and the Howe family have announced there'll be a public visitation for Gordie Howe at St. Louis Arena Tuesday, June 14th at the Joe Louis Arena, Tuesday, June 14th from 9 a.m. till 9 p.m. And we certainly yesterday, while we were talking about Gordie Howe, Mr. Hockey, we saw the Muhammad Ali funeral and the procession, in his case, going by his house in Louisville, the street, the house he lived in, and Gordie Howe coming full circle as far as, which he did a few years ago, back in the Red Wing fold, and will be at Joe Louis Arena on Tuesday for a public visitation. President Barack Obama from the White House. The list of hockey players who suited up in six different decades, including returning to the ice after being inducted into the Hall of Fame, is a short one. It starts and ends with Gordie Howe. But the list of kids who skated around the pond until dark, picturing themselves passing, scoring, and enforcing like Howe, dreaming of hoisting the Stanley Cup like him, that one comprises too many to count. Howe's productivity, perseverance, and humility personified his adopted hometown of Detroit, to which he brought four championships and which he represented as an all-star more than 20 times. The greatest players defined their game for a generation. Over more than half a century on the ice, Mr. Hockey defined it for a lifetime. Michelle and I send our condolences to his sons and daughter, his family, and his loyal fans from Hockeytown to Hartford to Houston and across North America. From the President Barack Obama. So, again, thanks to the guests joining us tonight. We had, or this afternoon, Chris Johnson in San Jose. Regular visit with him, teeing up what's going on there, the game tomorrow. The San Jose side from Jamie Baker as the San Jose Sharks look to bring it back to Pittsburgh. And then Phil Bork, one of our favorites, always talking about the Pittsburgh Penguins, and he just got back from practice, feels their head, minds, motivation, focus is in a real good place. So tomorrow night we'll have that on the Fan Radio Network. And, of course, Scotty Bowman, he joined us to talk a little bit about hockey and also memories of Wayne Gretzky. And, again, memories of Gordie Howe. We heard from Wayne Gretzky as well, and Emil the Cat Francis, a childhood friend. We'll be back at it tomorrow, Game 6 on the Fan Radio Network. You've been listening to Hockey Nation with Gord Stellick on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.